From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a hashtag created by an 11-year-old girl. Marley Diaz told CNN that she was tired of reading books about, quote, white boys and their dogs. So she took matters into her own hands. After starting sixth grade in 2015, she launched the hashtag 1000 Black Girl Books to raise awareness of books that feature people of color as the main characters. Diaz's book drive became a global phenomenon, and she's collected more than 11,000 books since she launched her project. Diaz said, quote, whenever you see a character you identify with, you carry it with you, and it inspires you. I want to introduce girls like me to books that will inspire them, end quote. While diversity in children's books has improved, at least a little, in recent years, the number of titles featuring characters of color still lag behind those featuring white protagonists. According to the Cooperative Children's Book Center, the CCBC, 9% of children's books published in the United States in 2017 featured African-American characters. That's up from 5% in 2014. An organization called We Need Diverse Books is pushing to improve those statistics. The group works with teachers and librarians across the country to share titles and help readers understand how children of all backgrounds benefit from diverse books. We Need Diverse Books will lead a panel discussion with local authors at the Henrietta Public Library next week. And I've just been informed it is already sold out, which means there's a lot of interest, and that's why we're glad to have a conversation this hour. Our guests are here to help us preview that panel and discuss the current state of children's literature. Joining us in studio, we have Andrea Page, author of Sioux Code Talkers of World War II, and a recently retired teacher. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Nice to have you.
Thanks for the invitation, and that's why I could be here so quickly.
That's great. Leslie C. Youngblood is the author of Love Like Sky, and we always appreciate your perspective. Thanks for coming back on the program.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And on the line with us is Caroline Richmond, Program Director for We Need Diverse Books. Caroline, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, so let's just start with sort of the backdrop of how we think the landscape looks, and then we're going to really kind of work through the questions of how change happens and what it means. But Caroline, when we talk about, you know, what the CCBC says about 9% of children's books in the latest full year of data, 2017, featured African or African-American characters, up from 5% in 2014, it's incremental change. What are you seeing when it comes to change and you know, sort of tell me a little bit about what the goal looks like.
Sure. Well, We Need Diverse Books, like you said, it started as a hashtag on Twitter back in 2014. We've since grown into a 501c3 nonprofit based in the Washington, D.C. area, although we work with schools and libraries nationwide, like coming up to Rochester next week to talk to your wonderful librarians there. And definitely in the last 5 years, we're celebrating our fifth anniversary this year. I've seen a lot of change happening. There's just been a groundswell of support from around the country, from readers, writers, illustrators, bloggers, librarians, teachers, who just want to see books that reflect the greater world around us. And the goal really is our mission, and that is to create a world in which all children can find themselves on the pages of a book. I think there's been a lot of work that's been done, but we still have a good ways to go.
I mentioned in 2015 you had Marley Diaz and her hashtag 1000 Black Girl Books, which is now over 11,000, and that's gone viral. And as you say, Caroline, We Need Diverse Books comes out in 2014 as a sort of a social media movement. Why do you think it caught on the way it did?
I think social media just helped people organize in ways that they haven't been before. I think there's been a call and a demand for diverse books previously, but people have been isolated in their own communities. They haven't been able to reach, you know, people in other cities and states and around the world. And Twitter was just a way for people to connect. And through the hashtag, it just kind of went viral. I think it took a lot of our founding members by surprise. Just the way it just caught on, it started trending on Twitter. And it just showed that there was a hunger for this, that people have wanted to see themselves represented in books. And not only that, you know, in movies, in plays, just all around, you know, we want the world to reflect what we look like.
So let's kind of turn to a teacher in the room, Andrea Page, you're recently retired. You taught sixth grade?
Correct, yep.
And, you know, you're an author yourself, but what did you see over the years when it came to assigned reading lists and what the options for teachers were?
Well, obviously, it's becoming more diverse as people go along. I remember early on in my career reading curriculum classes, my master's degree, that I needed to make sure that I picked books that had diverse characters in them, picture books, illustrations, and the content. And it was kind of hard in the beginning, but it's more readily available now. And there are so many great authors that have such wonderful messages in the writing that they're producing. So,
who makes the rules for what schools are offering kids for the reading list?
Well, I can only talk about my school.
Sure.
So for the summer reading list, the librarian and the English department chair got together, and they share information. And they actually have turned it over into the hands of the kids the last couple of years as part of their written product that they have to do, is they have to read from the list and then say that this is a really good book to keep on the list, or this isn't a good book to keep on the list. We need more different titles.
Do you recall any complaints from parents or students over the years as to a lack of diversity among books?
I don't recall that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And now yours was a district that was didn't have a ton of diversity, is fair to say?
It's growing. We have more kids coming.
Sure.
As it's grown.
Sure. And so I think it's just kind of instructive from the teaching perspective because, you know, I already have some notes and I'll read them this hour from teachers currently active who are struggling or working through this in their own districts. But as someone who's now recently retired, what would you say to teachers, at least from their own perspective, on what they can do to increase the diversity in school reading lists?
So many days I'm a book hog. I love books, book nerd, and I just loved using picture books in the sixth grade classroom. They're short, they're easy. You can find a lot of great biographies about inspiring people. I picked books that talked about, different history backgrounds. I talked about mysterious events, and I also had a science background. I taught science and math as well, so I brought in different science topics. But, you know, short and sweet picture books, you don't have to read the whole thing. You can get them interested, put it up on your board, and let the kids use it when they have a chance to, read silently a little bit.
Before I turn to Leslie, let me just ask Caroline, what do you want teachers to do about this, Caroline?
I think it's important for bookshelves to have books that are mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. And I'm quoting the seminal essay by Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop, who talked about the importance for kids to be able to see themselves in the books that they read, but to also be able to kind of step through the glass into worlds and cultures and peoples beyond their own. And every bookshelf should have that balance of books.
Okay. Well, Leslie, we kind of were talking before the hour began about how I immediately thought of Where the Red Fern Grows with, I think, Old Dan and Anne were the names of the dogs. And one of them dies in this really sad way after getting attacked by an animal. And I mean, that's the first book I can remember making me cry. And yet here I am all these years later, listening to the story of Marley Diaz, who said she was sort of tired of hearing about books about white boys and their dogs, which is exactly what Where the Red Fern Grows was. And so it doesn't make me think that there's anything wrong per se with that particular book. It's a matter of seeing how narrow the scope of literature probably was for me and a lot of kids. Fair?
I think that's fair. And I think sometimes, even in classrooms and even when I talk to readers, it's there's a lot, people are sentimental about the books that they love. And what you love as a child was great. And we don't want to totally take away To Kill a Mockingbird, but there's other books out there. And whereas one child is pulled in to Where the Red Fern Grows, there's another child who totally disconnects. My perfect example would be Charlotte's Web. I couldn't read it. I just could not make a connection, and I didn't know why. And probably if I had other books with kids that looked like me presented to me, maybe I would have been more apt to read that book as well.
Did you have any moment or sort of realization as you grew up, almost overtly saying, hey, where are the people who look like me? Or is it more as an adult when you look back?
You know, sometimes as a writer now, I think about that, and I can't romanticize my childhood. And I can't remember a time where I said, where are the children that look like me? Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that. Sometimes it's not the child's place to ask that question. They may not know to ask it. They may be so, like, my family was so engaging. We told oral stories. I had magazines with people that looked like me. My mom, we've had a subscription to Essence, to Ebony, to Jet. So I didn't lack it, and I didn't know that I was lacking it in novels, and no one shared it with me, but I learned as a high schooler.
So let me get a little feedback. This is an email that comes from a teacher who's currently at work right now, and I love because, you know, connections is on when there are break periods, and when we have a lot of teachers who listen, sometimes more covertly than others, but hey, when you're on break. But I will not identify by name just to protect the innocent here. But this teacher is an English teacher who writes, thank you for shedding so much light on this long overdue issue. We are finally seeing local school districts beginning to think about diversifying students' experience with literature. And next, let's start asking questions about the exclusivity of standard English in our education and testing, end quote. Caroline, what do you make of that?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't have an educator's background, so I don't feel like I could tackle it from a professional standpoint. But I do think, yeah, there definitely is a hole in what we're teaching our kids. Because when kids aren't able to see themselves in books, it makes them to start thinking maybe their stories don't matter, maybe their voices don't matter, maybe they don't matter. And it can turn them off from reading. And that's just one of the most beautiful things I think we have in life is, you know, reading books, being able to transport ourselves into other people's heads and lives. And, you know, we're really hurting our young people when we're not providing them these mirror and window books in their lives.
How do you feel about that, Leslie?
You know, when I look back, I realize that there were so many books written that I could have been exposed to that I just missed. And as an adult, when I research, there have been people writing books with people of color for a long time. It's just that we were not exposed to them. So it's really about just not saying that there aren't authors that have been doing the work. It's about getting the teachers, the parents, to understand that we need to bring these books into focus.
Okay. Andrea?
So I was thinking about the voices that are coming out in writing now, and I'm just starting to read Leslie's book that she has out, and I just love the voice of the girl in the book, and it's a true to her culture. In the Lakota culture, when you're trying to learn the language, you're not only just learning the words and the grammar, you're also learning about the culture and the family relationships and how important the values are. So when we have more authors that are going to be sharing their culture in authentic ways, I think that's important too. And I think the kids are going to get a great benefit from reading those kind of books.
Listeners, as we take your feedback, just want to remind you that the event, We Need Diverse Libraries, Diversifying Your Bookshelves for Young Readers and Teens, that's next Tuesday the 24th, and it's sold out already. There's a lot of interest. So this event, a We Need Diverse Book Seminar that's coming to the Henrietta Public Library, we thought an ideal time to have this conversation if you don't have a chance to attend next Tuesday the 24th. Mary in Greece is first on the phone. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Evan, and hi, panel. I love that we're talking about this topic. I'm on the school board up in Greece, and we are very proud that we started the Mosaics Initiative, where our teacher, Sally Brothers, listened to students and realized that their voice wasn't being represented and that the students wanted to pick the literature they were studying. So she started offering the Mosaics course at Arcadia, and now it has taken off in all of our high schools. And then students who weren't in 12th grade wanted to be a part of this, and so then they started Mosaics Club. And you'll now find this course being offered throughout Monroe County. And it was really our district and our administration and our teachers listening to students and saying, we agree, your voice isn't being heard. teach us the way, show us where you want to go with it. And now we have our literacy teachers in the elementary schools ensuring that all students are offered books that show them both through mirrors and through the sliding glass doors. So we're very proud of that up here in Greece.
Before I let you go, Mary, yeah. When you say, you know, students have a chance to choose what they read and lead the way, are we talking about hypothetically, let's say there's 20 children in a class, every child chooses their own reading, or they choose together as a group? Because, you know, I'm just thinking if the white students are choosing Where the Red Fern Grows and the African-American students are choosing Leslie's book or other books, that may be progress, but I'm curious to know if that's how it works or if it's another way.
No, it's both. So as classes, they're picking the works that they're reading and studying together, and then in individual reading times, they're picking the works that also speak to them. So there's a lot of choice and student voice, and, you know, they don't just limit themselves to their class with their reading. They're sharing it with other teachers. They're putting on events in Greece, like we have the Black Scholars Award ceremony every February, and they lead the way, the Mosaics groups. We have some amazing leaders and students in our district, and we're listening to them and making sure that they're getting what they need in terms of literature.
All right, Mary, thank you for that, and that sort of a data point. I'll ask our guests to kind of weigh in on how they think that might work. Caroline, what do you think?
I think that'd be really interesting to see how it goes. I'm really excited to come up to Rochester next week and meet with all of your librarians and educators. We also have an app that WNDB put together. It's free. It's called Our Story. It's a wonderful way to find diverse books. You know, if your kid finishes, let's say, you know, a Percy Jackson story or the Harry Potter series, and you think, I'd really love for them to find another book in this vein, but maybe, you know, a little different. So the Our Story app is a perfect way to just kind of sign on and look for books in the age range you're looking for and the genre, and you can, all the books on there are vetted by our volunteers, and they are all diverse.
Okay. Andrea, what do you think of what you just heard from what Greece was trying to do there?
That's awesome. And to put it in the hands of the kids and have them become those leaders in that case is just inspiring. And from what she says, if it's taking off around the county, that's true. I worked with teachers, and one of the things that we loved to talk about was books. And one of my friends, obviously, Gretchen, that she was an avid reader. And one of the things she was really good at, she is really good at, she's still in the classroom, is matching books up to the students in her classroom based on either their needs or what she sees they're looking for or struggling with, or you know, topics they're interested in. She just really gets to know her kids, and she matches them up with books. And they always come out of her classroom reading more and more by the end of the year. So teachers sharing their passion about things. My passion was about veterans and patriotism and obviously Native American topics, but anybody who was an inspiring leader and current events. And those were the kinds of books that I would share with my kids. And they were interested in different topics, and they learned a little bit. Hmm.
Leslie, what do you think of what you just heard from Mary?
Oh, absolutely a wonderful idea. I think anytime that the kids get a chance to, as the quote from Dr. Bishop Sim says, to look out and see the world through either a recommended book or a book that even a librarian recommends, it gives just a new perspective. So as many kids can do that as possible is what we want to see.
So let me get an email from another teacher, also on break, also asking to remain anonymous. And this is all verified, by the way. I love this. And I think there is a very important point here that I'm going to ask all of our guests to address. And this teacher writes, quote, important to make sure the recommended books aren't all about the story of, quote, poor, downtrodden people of color. Some school reading lists include many authors of color, but one might come away thinking there is only one kind of experience of being Black or being Latino or being LGBTQI, etc. The Rochester Teacher Center was actually creating books for this purpose. They've offered all kinds of training and professional development that explores all kinds of resources, and she points us to RochesterTeacherCenter.org if you want to check out more about that. But I think that's important. I'm going to start with Leslie C. Youngblood on that. She's saying, even if our kids are reading books in school about people of color, too often it's a narrow view of what life is like, for example, being black in America, et cetera. Do you agree with that?
Well, often I hear that about what they call exploiting black pain or black suffering or black poverty. And I think there is a lot of that out there. But now we know that there is so much more, and there's so many other books available that go beyond that. Say, for instance, on Love Like Sky, I did get pushback from people saying that, well, she's a middle class girl and she's going through middle class problems. But not understanding that even that is something that we don't read often enough.
And how much of a problem do you think that is if every time there is a gay character or an African-American character in a book or a Latino character, an Asian character, a Native American, if it's a narrow sort of predictable experience, how much of a problem is that?
Well, it's a huge problem because we're stepping into stereotypes. We're stepping into, and you don't want that. That's why we not only want diverse books, but we want the diversity in authors. There was a point there, and especially in middle grade fiction, where even though there was a black person on the cover, if you research the author was not of color. So sometimes you are getting like a image that is either stereotypical, the voice is not a true voice. And so just having that one monolithic experience is not true, and it's not giving honest representative of African-American culture, especially, and it's unfair to the kids. That is why, you know, we will get into the realm of stereotypes when we only look at one story, because there's so many more.
Andrea Page has Native American heritage. She's the author of Sioux Code Talkers of World War II. To the extent that we would see and read Native Americans in books, especially in school reading lists, is it a pretty narrow view of what that genre would look like?
Well, sure. And I actually brought the chart that you were talking about, and Native American or First Nations books are at 1%. And 83% own voices. The people that are writing come from an oral culture. Mm-hmm. So to write things down is challenging, I think. I found it a challenge to write because I'm half Native American. I didn't grow up on the reservation. My mom did. So I wanted to make sure, as an author of that culture, to verify anything that I was writing down to make sure that it was correct to the best of my knowledge. And I think that's a responsibility that authors have. So, yeah, there's not a lot of Native authors. It's growing, I'm glad to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Just in my experience as a parent of an elementary school student, my expectation would be, and again, I always put this caveat in there, but it matters. I'm not denigrating public school teachers. I mean, my son's teachers have absolutely blown me away from start to finish in his school career so far, and I'm so grateful for them. But my assumption is, especially in the elementary level, and I don't know about middle and high school, but if there's Native American characters in any book, it's probably going to be some sort of overly whitewashed ceremonial dinner that probably never happened with the white settlers and explorers, or a view of sort of sort of cartoonish violence. I mean, that's kind of the narrow frame that I've seen. What are the stereotypes you would expect, unfortunately, if we find Native American characters in books, Andrea?
Well, I choose to pick the authors that are more authentic.
Yeah.
But growing up, I know that the message that I got were Native Americans, American Indians back then were to be chased down and, you know, changed into the white culture, and, you know, we weren't good people. I had a family that taught us differently.
yeah.
But, you know, it was hard to think about.
I hear students now literally saying that, well, Native Americans lived a long time ago.
And that's one of the things that I, now that you say that, I remembered wanting to become an author, a children's author, because I heard that in my classroom too. And I would try when I could to incorporate experiences I had with my family on the reservation and share that, you know, there are people that are working. Two of my cousins are actually presidents of the colleges out there. You know, there are people that are producing and contributing to our society. So it's not all something of the past, and not everybody lives in teepees.
Caroline, what do you make of the email from this teacher who's concerned that even if we are seeing books with more protagonists of color, that it may be sort of a limited view of what it means to live with certain identities in this country?
I definitely share the concern. I'm Chinese American myself, and there shouldn't be just that one narrative, one story idea, right? I definitely think, at least when the Asian American experience is concerned, a lot of times the story is the immigration story, you know, the person coming over and the hardships they face and how tough and difficult life is adjusting. And those stories are really important. You know, a lot of my own parents are immigrants who came over from Taiwan, and those stories are needed, but they aren't, they shouldn't become the single representation of who we are, because we are diverse within our own communities. And one thing that I've been really heartened to see in the last 5 years is to see kind of explorations of different kinds of Asian Americans. It was really cool to see the book To All the Boys I've Loved Before not only become a bestseller, but to become a movie on Netflix. It's a young adult trilogy by the author Jenny Han. And it was so cool to see an Asian American protagonist as the love interest versus the best friend versus the nerdy girl in science club, you know? So we definitely need a diversity in diverse books as well.
Listeners, we're talking about the movement that you might have seen hashtagged in various forms of social media. We need diverse books. Or perhaps you saw the hashtag 1,000 Black Girl Books. So we're talking about these movements that have slowly started to move things when it comes to what's taught in schools, what's published, what ends up in bookstores. And that conversation is coming in a very specific form next week, Tuesday the 24th, to Henrietta. We need diverse libraries, diversifying your bookshelves for young readers and teens. It's an event that is sold out already, the We Need Diverse Book Seminar at the Henrietta Public Library. So I don't know if you call them what they're going to tell you. I mean, but I just want you to know that's how valuable these communities across the country feel these kinds of conversations are, especially when you have people like Caroline Richmond, who's on the line with us, program director for We Need Diverse Books, who can come in and join these conversations and talk about what change really looks like. We're talking also to a couple of authors in our community, Andrea Page and Leslie C. Youngblood. They are here with us, and I'm sure they would love for you to check out their work. Andrea is the author of Sioux Code Talkers of World War II. Leslie's book is Love Like Sky. And after this break, we have more of your feedback. If you want to call the program, whether you're a teacher on lunch break and you can, well, shroud your voice and use another name, or I actually want to ask listeners a direct question too. And unfortunately, I don't know how much feedback we're going to get because the answer is probably not much yet. But have you seen change? Has your kid come home with a school reading assignment that surprised you? And I mean surprised you in saying, oh, I've never seen this book taught before. Here's an author I've never encountered before, an author of color, a book with protagonists of color. Has anything surprised you? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, the psychological industry tells us that we are living in an age of anxiety. It's expressed in many different ways, but we are anxious about work, about climate change, about the future. Now, what about Buddhism? What about Zen practices, meditation, mindfulness? How much can it help? We dig into it Thursday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Alex writes to say, I agree with most of this, but are your guests saying authors can only write authentically within their own identity? It's from Alex. I'm going to start with Caroline. What do you make of that, Caroline?
No, I don't think that authors shouldn't write X, Y, or Z. I think it's important for writers to write diversely, to reflect our diverse world. As a writer myself, what I like to ask myself before I write a project is, am I the best person to tell this story? Sometimes the answer is yes, and other times the answer might be no. I do think, as a Chinese American, just growing up in a Chinese household, I kind of know the nuances of the language and the culture, and so I'd be able to speak to that more intimately and thus more authentically than someone who didn't. But ultimately, writers need to figure that out for themselves, and if they do decide to write outside of their own experiences, to really dig in and do the research and talk to people. And just as if you're writing a book about a botanist, you probably do a lot of research about that, right? And maybe try to talk to a few botanists and ask them to read your work. If you're going to write outside of your own cultural experiences, I would say the same goes.
Okay. Andrea, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with what she's saying, is that as an author, you really have to do your homework. And you have to be passionate about what it is that you're writing. And if it is outside of your own culture, or you have to make sure you're doing your homework, like she said. And I think it's a shame that, with this kind of a question or this kind of an attitude, that people can't write outside of, their own heritage, that we're going to lose a lot of really good books, which is what we're trying to do, is to get more diverse books. You have people that are writing about Jim Thorpe. And the latest one I read was not written by a Native American, and it was awesome. And how sad would it be if he chose not to write that book because he wasn't of that culture? So I think we have to be careful that we're not stifling people to get out good information.
Okay. And the point also there, before I turn to Leslie, is we've been talking a lot about fiction, but we're talking about all books here. We're talking about books, historical books, nonfiction, the whole range.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Leslie, how do you feel about Alex's question?
I get the question a lot, and I need to rate. I'm focused on fiction. That's my specialty. I will say there's two things. There's one, when you're looking at it from the publishing point of view, there is an issue if from the publishing point of view we're stifling African American writers and people of color who can write from their own experience to make way for non-people of color who are writing from that experience. So that becomes a problem. Now, as far as what a writer chooses to write, yes, like everyone is saying, if they do the proper research, but from workshops, from MFA, and just from talking to other writers, knowing one Black person doesn't make you an expert to write from that person's point of view. And I've seen that. I've taught. I've seen these stories. So I like to guard against that, or tell a person that's when the stereotypes come, because you may see us portrayed one way in books that you read or one way on TVs and movies. Therefore, you may think that you know the nuances when you really don't. And so people start to write from that point of view, which brings us back to why it is extremely important to open up diversity for kids to understand and to get a better view of a particular culture, not just what they see on TV or not just what they read in quote unquote that secondary character. And that does not make a person an expert.
Yeah, Leslie is bringing up what the risk is if you write outside your own culture and it's lazy or based in stereotype, because stereotype can do a lot of damage.
Exactly. It's just perpetuating it, and that's what we don't want. And it seems like I haven't had the call to have a white protagonist, but if someone that is not Black has a call to have a Black protagonist, as long as you do the research, as long as that calling you feel is authentic, that is the story you need to write, I'm not going to stop that, but you just have to ask the question and do the research.
Are you mistrustful of white authors who write about Black protagonists?
Would that be my go-to to pick it up? To be perfectly honest, yes. I'll just say that. I would I don't say that to cause a division. I say that because this is what I feel. I like to know why. I would like to know, just as if someone would like to know of all the things that I personally can write about, why would I choose to write about, first and foremost, a young 11-year-old white girl? I'm not saying that it cannot be done. I'm not saying that it hasn't been done before, but I will ask the question, why, and why shouldn't I? Because I value that culture so much. I know the nuances. I know even living in, and that's living in that culture is hard to capture. So, of course, I'm going to expect those expectations to be high, as I should expect them to be high. So it's not something that you write because you see African-Americans and people of color as something so easily accessible because you have access to their music, you have access to their comedy. It's more than that. It's deeper than that. So I would be mistrustful, but if I do read something that's well done, I would acknowledge that.
Andrea, are you mistrustful of white writers who are writing about Native American protagonists?
Well, that would be most of history. A white male has written down most of American Indian history. And so to go through and pull out the truth and try and do it respectfully, and share a different worldview, which is what Leslie's trying to say, too. When you experience something yourself, there are nuances there. And I know that was one of the things that I was really afraid of when I was writing my book, because I know, not having lived or grown up on the reservation, there were going to be nuances that maybe I didn't know about. And I did my best through my mother and my family and the elders on the reservation to tell the right worldview.
Hmm. Caroline, would you be mistrustful of a white author writing about Asian Americans?
I don't know if mistrustful is the word I'd use. I'd be intrigued and open-minded, but to echo what Andrea and Leslie said, it's really, really hard to write outside of your own cultural experiences, just because there's so many tiny nuances and little changes in vocabulary and behaviors that are hard to capture, even if you're married to someone of that culture, even if your kids are, you know, biracial, like my kids are half white, half Asian. Even if you're, you know, you have loved ones and close friends who are from that background, it's tough. It can still be hard as an observer. So I guess I'd approach it with a little bit of apprehension.
Yeah, it's an interesting set of answers here, because I think sometimes we too often lately are kind of dividing this kind of question into, oh, well, some people just want to cancel all white writers who want to write outside their experience, versus, you know, the other side being, I don't, it just feels cartoonish. Whereas what I heard was a lot of nuance here. And I actually heard, what I hear is a lot of growth, which is that nobody's saying you can't.
No one says
that. It's a free country. You may write about whatever you please, but recognizing the dynamics, the risks of stereotype, and the work the baseline would be an expectation for you to undertake if you want to write outside your experience before you earn respect and acclaim.
You have to be accountable.
Accountable,
and that makes sense. That we respect that voice so much that we want you to be accountable. This is not the days where it's the canon or nothing. So therefore, if we look beyond the canon and we look beyond what people have given us to read, and we try to understand that we know that this culture is important, these voices are important, these young children are important, and we want them represented well. So to make someone accountable for that, we have that right to do that, and I do it.
Yeah, I mean, and if you want to see what bad stereotyping looks like in the hands of sort of a white male author, I would hesitate to tell anybody to buy Bill O'Reilly's books, but the former Fox News host wrote fiction. I'm not kidding. He actually wrote fiction. There's an entire podcast in which the host can barely get through reading his pages without laughing because it's so bad. It's really bad. It's bad prose to begin with, but it's also filled with the worst kind of stereotypes among every character. It's just this just hackish view of every possible stereotype. And at the same time, the problem is to experience that you'd have to pick up Bill O'Reilly's book. I can't recommend that. but I'm glad, listeners, you've been hanging in with us this hour, including now the third email from a teacher I've gotten. You ready for this? It's teacher's hour here. And a teacher writes to me and says, Evan, answer the question that you posed to your audience, are we seeing a change or any books that surprise you? As a parent, the answer to your question is no. As a teacher, conversations like the one you're having right now give me license to push the limits of my school's curriculum standards and take risks by introducing new and diverse voices and characters. So, okay. So, more conversation about risk taking and opening more doors. And we appreciate that. And we certainly hope we can do more of that. But another email comes from a listener who wants me to ask the panel about the impact on white students. So there's been a lot of talk about, and understandably so, about what happens when students growing up, students of color, don't have any books in which the authors or the protagonists look like them and can relate to their own experiences. But this emailer, Angela, wants to know, isn't there a negative impact on white students when it's monolithically white authors and white protagonists? Caroline, what do you think?
Yes, definitely. I think it's just as important for kids in the majority to have diverse books as diverse kids need those mirror books where they see themselves reflected. You know, books open up the world to children. And in some communities, you know, books might be the only means for a child to see what life is like for someone of a different race, cultural background, sexual orientation. And so books can be that window for them to these, you know, what people are like beyond their own immediate families and friendship circles and communities. So I think it's absolutely vital that, you know, white kids, straight kids, you know, are exposed to diverse books as well.
Andrea, what do you think?
So I think teachers can really take the lead on this in their classrooms and say what is important to learn from all of these books. And what I tried to do was, what are the big takeaways? Everybody has struggles. Everybody has challenges. And yes, they're all different degrees. But as you build your classroom and your team, you're trying to teach these kids about history and about atrocities and how we've treated people and how we can make a difference in overcoming our struggles together and working out, you know, whatever the connections are that the kids can make, try and provide a variety of connections for the kids to, you know, apply to their own life. And I think teachers really can be powerful sharing their enthusiasm for great stories, because a great story has to have a character that overcomes something challenging, but also show that it's across the board in all of the cultures.
Okay, Leslie?
Well, it's definitely important if you find yourself with a homogeneous classroom that you do use books to do what they're intended to do, which is, as Caroline said, to open up that window, to show them the world outside of that classroom or their neighborhood, or, you know, bringing it back to libraries outside of their library. Their library may be one that is only visited by a certain demographic. So it is important to have those books visible. And if a white child isn't exposed to a Black protagonist, especially on the cover of a book, if they find that odd, then I think we failed them in a way. Well, we have failed them.
What kind of feedback have you gotten since Love Like Sky came out from a wide range of readers?
Well, the number one thing is definitely the protagonist on the cover, the dark-skinned protagonist on the cover, with it being her story, owning that story, has been positive. And that is probably the number one feedback that I received, because even before you read the novel, there is that African-American girl owning that book. There is her place on that shelf, and we need more of that. So that has been the number one feedback. And of course, the book deals with blended families. So there is a way for every child that experienced that, which gets into the universal themes of books, can connect. And you will find, as we often do, that they're more of the same than they are different.
Our guests are the authors of books like Love Like Sky, Sioux Code, Talkers of World War II, The Only Thing to Fear, The Darkest Hour. And I'm wondering, are we starting to see more classrooms pick up all of your books? Leslie?
I'm hoping so. I mean, we do a book fair in October, Books to Go, and it will be there. Love Like Sky will be there. But I think it's still a slow process.
Okay. What do you think, Andrea?
I'm hoping it gets into more classrooms. My book won an award in May, so my publisher said that kind of opens the door to get it into more classrooms, which is awesome.
Okay. Leslie, you want to jump back in there?
Yes. It has been chosen as a Scholastic book for the next 5 years. So it comes out in paperback October 8th. So I'm hoping that would give it a little bit more accessibility.
Caroline, how's it going for you?
I can't complain. I'm also published with Scholastic, and they've been wonderful. And it's just been really neat to see my book. My very first book, The Only Thing to Fear, features a biracial half Asian protagonist. You know, to see, you know, kids who don't look like me enjoying it and picking it up. Because I do have to say, you know, when I was a kid, it was so hard for me to find books that looked like me. And it's been really cool to see, you know, how our bookshelves are diversifying, and, you know, white kids, boys, they're reading my book about, you know, a half Asian girl, and they're enjoying it too. So it's really satisfying as a writer.
So in our last couple of minutes here, as we talk about the efforts behind We Need Diverse Books, an organization now that is leading a seminar next week at the Henrietta Public Library that is sold out, I think it's important to also talk about the industry itself and what it chooses to publish, because we've been talking about teachers, we've been talking about parents, we've even talked about what students are being empowered to do in choosing their own reading lists. But Caroline, the industry itself, the publishing industry, whether we're talking about YA or the industry at large, how open do you think the doors are for authors of color?
I think they're widening. I definitely think there are a lot of very passionate people working in publishing now who are encouraging change and who are really supportive of initiatives like We Need Diverse Books, and who are actively seeking out diverse voices. But it's a slow changing industry, you know? So there definitely can be pushback. Sometimes there might be the thought, like, you know, we have our Asian book for the season, mm-hmm. and that's enough. So we're definitely trying to make headway. And one initiative that WNDB has spearheaded is our internship grant program. It provides basically a living stipend for diverse interns who are trying to work their way up the publishing industry, because publishing itself has been a very white-dominated career path for a long time, in large part because it's so expensive to live in New York City. So a lot of marginalized people just end up not even pursuing it because they don't know how to, you know, make a living as a editorial assistant making, you know, $30,000 a year in one of the most expensive cities in the world. So that's our way of trying to change publishing from within by getting diverse staff members, you know, going up the pipeline.
What do you think, Andrea?
Yeah, I think the publishers are definitely trying to, and agents are trying to acquire more diversity in their authors. And I know having just gone to the Highlights Foundation, which is a great workshop place for writers, they're also trying to, like other programs, are trying to build up their diversity in their authors, that they're trying to attract different programs that they are different writers in different programs, that they're doing diversity fellowships and things like that. So I think the opportunities are growing, which is awesome.
Yeah. Leslie?
It's slowly growing, I think, or slowly changing, but sometimes your view online and sometimes your view at certain conferences changes when you see who's actually in the audience at times. And I'll just say personally, my agent and editor with Disney are both white. There's not a lot of agents in agents and editors in publishing. There is growing, but is not where I think we would want it to be.
So you go to those conferences and it's pretty white?
It's pretty white. I mean, let's just be honest. I'm not, you know, so I think that's changing. I think, you know, with groups that are making a push with Twitter handles and things like that, with people of color in publishing, they're trying to shorten that gap. But right now we have to say it is still a majority white. And that is where I go back to just quickly talking about people who get the contracts to write the books. If we have an ample and able amount of black writers to write that book, I will question why is that given to a white person to write. So that's pretty much what I was getting at before when I have that mistrust.
Yeah. Caroline, as we let you go here, We Need Diverse Books, they're coming to Henrietta next week. The event is sold out on Tuesday the 24th at the Henrietta Public Library. But where can people go online to learn more about what you're trying to do?
Yeah, we have a website. It's diversebooks.org, and we are also very active on social media. So feel free to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, where you can get, we retweet a lot of articles about diverse books. And we also have a newsletter, so please subscribe.
Caroline's books as well include The Only Thing to Fear, The Darkest Hour, among more. And Caroline, you're generous with your time. Thanks for taking for it this hour.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's Caroline Richmond, the program director for We Need Diverse Books. Andrea Page's book is Sioux Code Talkers of World War II. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure, and I've learned a lot.
We always do, and we've got great panels and include people like Leslie C. Youngblood, the author of Love Like Sky, which is, of course, out now as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. And our thanks to Tim Shea behind the glass, doing a lot of work today. Thank you, Tim. Megan Mack is engineering and producing. I'm just hosting. I'm Evan. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.